Hello, everyone. Hi. Welcome to probably, I chuckle when I think of the topic that I was asked to speak on, because I'm like, that's like not a very fun thing to spend an hour talking about. So hopefully your next session's more fun. I'm committed, though, to making this a fun hour for all of us together. My name's Carmen. I am a lot of things. I'm a pastor, I'm a wife, I'm a mom. Those are probably the three biggest ones that have relevance to the things that I spend most of my time doing. I've been in ministry for almost 20 years, which like I still the math ain't mathin' because I don't know, like can't be that old yet. But I've done all kinds of pastoral roles. Currently, I'm working as a worship pastor at a church in Burlington, so I live pretty locally. Curious, like who feels like they're from really far away? Like I'm really curious about. I have no prizes. This isn't a prize game. I'm actually just curious. Who came
Who's here
far?
far?
I don't know.
Sarnia.
Sarnia? Okay. What about
We came
you?
from Barrie.
Oh, nice. That's a good amount of time. Where? Oh yeah, that's reasonable. Okay, so a good like spectrum represented in the room. Who came from pretty local? Closer than Burlington. Anyone closer than Burlington? Okay, cool. Okay, so this session, I honestly don't even know, remember what description I put in the book. But we're gonna spend the next hour talking about when a season of our life is just really hard. When there might be grief, there might be confusion, there might be disorientation. And like what it looks like to live in that space and still trust that God is good, that the church is good, and what he might have to say to us in that space. I'll admit this is a newer topic for me. I've been at Outpour for a number of years, and every year they ask me to speak on one of my favorite things, which is like women in leadership. And I love it and it's great. And then this year they're like, can you talk on this? And I was like, I guess. So I'm really trusting that God has a lot for us in this time together. And the best way I knew how to do this is to just tell you a story. Because the only thing I can share from is my own experience and the things that I have. So I'm actually going to tell like a few lanes of stories and how they converge and the seasons of my life that I have found where life has been really hard. And all of those words that I think I put in the book, like grief and loss and failure, have described and defined the seasons of life that I find myself with. So, before we start, I just want you to turn to people around you just for like 30 seconds, and I want you to give a letter grade to three categories, okay? I want you to give a letter grade to the church. How do you think the church is doing these days? What letter grade would you give the church? What letter grade would you give the world? And what letter grade would you give your own life? So, just for 30 seconds, talk about it. I would love to hear. Go for it. Talk amongst yourselves. All right. Let's circle back. Would love to hear. I think I gave you church first. What kind of letter grade are we giving the church these days? Just shout out some of your answers.
A.
A?
B
to A minus. Anything else? C? Yeah. Spectrum? Anyone give it lower than a C? D minus. Okay. Yeah. That's fair.
Depending on the church, I'll read too.
Yeah, for sure. Totally. Okay. What was the second one? The world? Okay, the world. What letter grade are we giving the world these days? A big fat F. Yes, we all feel the same about that. I'm going to ask this. You don't have to answer if you don't want, but your own life. What kind of letter grades are you giving your own life these days? Anyone, someone's giving an F? F? Yeah, fair. Anyone else? A Z. Okay. Did you say Z? You did. Okay. And you said C? Yeah. Okay. And it could be all over depending on any given day. We're going to talk about when the letter grade of our life may not be so hot. How do we do it? So I want you to think for a minute. There's a story in scripture of this people group called the Israelites. They take up quite a bit of the story of the Bible, actually. And you can read this on your own time, but and hopefully you're all somewhat familiar with the story of the Israelites and the story of how they're God's people. But in Exodus 16, when we're done here today, or if you want to look while I'm talking, that's fine too. They have been in slavery for years and years and years, right? They've been in slavery. Their people aren't doing well. They're oppressed. There's injustice. And God frees them out of the slavery and the oppression of the Israelites or of the Egyptians. And in Exodus 16, we see they're currently wandering in the wilderness. So they are free from the Egyptian oppression, but they're not yet in the promised land that they have. And in Exodus 16, we see them complain. And there's a verse that says this, like, if only we could go back to what we had, at least in Egypt, we had food to eat. We want to go back. And we're going to talk about the rest of the story later, but I want you to hold on to that. Because you know that theme that's out there, that like trend that used to exist, I haven't seen in a while, where it's like how it started, how it's going. Mm-hmm. And often the trend is like, it started not so hot, and then the how it's going is like, things are great. And I think with the Israelites, it would have been the reverse in their current headspace, where they would say, how it started was like, at least we had food, at least we had some stability. And the how it's going is, we're starving here in the wilderness. What did God do to us? And they were in a season of grief and disorientation and not trusting that God was the one that was leading them. And they were in hardship. Now, we have the benefit of the whole story. And we might be like, what are you saying? Like, you were freed from oppression. You were freed from death. You were freed from slavery. But in their minds, what they currently had didn't feel familiar and it didn't feel known. And they would have rather gone back to what they had. So Exodus 16 is kind of where we're going to land. So I'm going to start with my stories. The first story is of a season of life where I was a pastor, which has been a lot of years. I was a pastor at this church when it was the meeting house. And some of you might know the story of the meeting house, and some of you might not, depending where you live, and it's been a number of years now. But this church here went through a significant season of crisis. And often when I tell people, I used to be the pastor at the meeting house, I get one of three responses. I either get like these wide eyes as they try to absorb what I just told them, like, whoa, that must have been a crazy ride. Or I get a little bit of a head tilt, like, oh, and it's like empathy, and like, oh, we feel for you because we know how hard that was. Or I get a blank stare because they have no context for what the story of this church might be. And that one's far less rare, but if you do fall into that last category, to sum it up, this church experienced a depth of crisis that we actually is sadly quite familiar. And we walked through a season of sexual abuse findings, high profile legal cases, and stories of years of harm and abuse kind of emerging that took a church that was once thriving and kind of decimated it. And its story is still being written, and it looks a lot different than it did. But it was a tough season for me personally. Because as many of you know who go to a church where you have a loved pastor and colleague and friend, there's a layer of brokenness and grief and disappointment that comes when someone that you know and worked with and respected makes decisions that cause harm, cause abuse, and are a story of failure. And so on a personal level, there was a lot for me to process. But then on a professional level, I was asked to pastor through that and navigating a church of thousands through a season of disorientation and loss and grief. And it was in the midst of that crisis where I was just like swirling and sad and broken that they asked me to step into the role of senior pastor. And honestly, it felt like this like whirlwind of a time. Like, you know, in those movies where they fast forward through a long season of time through like some sort of musical montage. And they just, like, I don't know, usually when someone's, like, in mid-glow-up and they start really ugly and then there's, like, this music and they're throwing clothes everywhere and makeup's going everywhere and then they turn out and they're amazing. Mine was not a glow-up. But it felt like this musical montage where I was walking down the hall of some sort of corporate office and I just had my hands out and people just kept adding, like, files and to-dos and take care of this and figure out this. And I'm just like, okay. And I had to walk and lead in a season where it was really hard to find what Jesus was up to. And I remember so many times I felt this statement, this is too big for me. My penmanship, it leaves something to be desired. This is too big for me. I cannot possibly handle this. And I was aware that me choosing to take this role as the senior pastor, it would send lots of emotions and opinions my way. Because this circumstance created quite a polarization of how people felt about people in power, pastoral failure, victims of abuse, and where one might stand in that circumstance. And I felt the distancing of some friends and some colleagues who fully supported and sided with the victims. and likely saw me choosing to stay as a level of betrayal to people who had experienced harm and abuse. And others possibly found themselves on the side of keeping the church together and would accuse me of being too victim-centric and being too silent on what they saw as the purpose of the church being reconciliation and forgiveness. There was polarization all around me. And I started to have this fear that any step I took would be the wrong one. And that's a tricky place to live in when you're trying to find your way around and all of a sudden you feel paralyzed that no matter what I do, someone's going to judge me or have something to say about me. I realized that regardless of whatever decision I made or call I had to do, people would end up disappointed or upset. I felt like I could not make a decision without feeling like it might end up on a podcast or in a tweet or in a newspaper article, free to be condemned and judged and taken out of context. And it was a really scary time to step into leadership. I remember there was one moment in this season of crisis in our church, and I was in the senior pastor role. It was August. It was like 10 months after everything had sort of exploded, and we knew we had more bad news for our church. And I had just gotten back from vacation. We had been out in Nova Scotia visiting family. And I remember even on the drive home, I'm on a call in the car in the middle of a board meeting, and I have to like keep my earbuds in because the topic of conversation around sexual abuse and allegations really isn't the thing you want your kids in the back to be listening to. And I come home, I'd been home the night before, and the next day we knew we had to do this town hall. And I made a lot of personal sacrifices in that season in the name of leadership. And so this event, we knew was going to be high profile. We knew the Toronto Star was live tweeting the event. We knew a group of young adults would likely show up in protest because they were a part of the harm that had occurred years before. And we knew we had hard information to share with our community yet again. And in the middle of this meeting, someone stood up with, it was supposed to be like a question and answer time. And you know, often when you're in question and answer, people have statements. They don't necessarily have questions. So someone stood up. And they had a long monologue, and it was wise and it was thought out. There was nothing wrong with a person standing up and doing that. But they listed all the concerns they had about how the board had handled all of this so poorly, and that they were like sheep without a shepherd with no senior pastor. And I'm sitting up there on stage as their senior pastor. And she asked everyone who agreed with her to stand. And I remember sitting on the stage where you guys have been all morning, with hundreds of people's eyes on me, thinking, I have to speak first. And I didn't want to. And there were other board members and colleagues, and I thought, no, this is for me to speak into. And I felt so ill-equipped and unseen. And I replayed what I said over and over and over again. And I remember the tears just flowed freely on the drive home, thinking, I should have said that. I didn't mean to, what's going to show up in the news the next day? And it felt like what we thought when we stepped into these roles of leadership, when I stepped in as senior pastor, I thought my job is going to be to take our church into a season of healing, to get through this crisis, to get to what's next. And it actually just felt like our job was like wave after wave, after lawsuit, after newspaper article, after allegation. And it was a very wearisome time where I had to hold space for leading and being where I thought God wanted me to be, where I know God asked me to be, and holding space for my own hardship and grief. And so this is kind of story number one. And some of you may have a similar story of disappointment with the church. It may not be a story quite like this, but where what you had hoped for from the church hasn't been there for you. What we think the church is meant to be and do and have for us isn't there. And what do we do with that? As people who are striving to follow after Jesus, what do we do when it feels like one of the places that we're meant to turn to and find community has let us down? And you might be sitting there and you might be thinking, wow, Carmen, that's a lot. There's actually more. it's maybe more of the personal layer of my time at this church in leadership. My time here didn't end well, and I wish I could say that thanks to my strong leadership, the church turned a corner and we're thriving and overcame, and it has a large kingdom impact today. But what did happen? They let me go. And through my final season here, there just became this like growing unsettledness of how we were stepping into leadership. And it unsettled my soul and where we were headed. And so I had asked to take just a short leave of absence to process some of this stuff with the board and really discern and take some time to pause and listen. And what ended up, started as a 4-week leave, ended up with like months of disoriented absence and silence, and culminated in them choosing to terminate me. And to this day, I still am not sure why. And that's not the point of today. I'm not here to like pour it all out. But I hold such a deep wound and such a deep hurt from how things ended. And I hold no ill will toward anyone involved. We were all walking through a very disorienting season, and I'm still trusting God with it. But I remember near the end, I shared with the people on the board something I thought God was saying to me, and it came from the Bible, and it was the story of the Tower of Babel. And in the story of the Tower of Babel, there's a lot of confusion, right? There's like, they can't seem to lead together. There's just like God caused them to speak different languages. And why did God do that? To stop them from building something they weren't supposed to build. And I really felt like there might be a word for us from God about what redirection we might need to go in our leadership. And I shared this openly and vulnerably. And the first response back to me was, Carmen, it sounds like you really don't want to be here. And I just remember in that moment feeling so disheartened, because it felt like my voice had been taken from me and the narrative had been rewritten on my behalf. And it felt like this space of like, how is that what you took out of what I think God might be saying? But in seasons of heavy hardship and disorientation, things can kind of just go sideways. And it felt like, well, I was over here saying this, whatever was interpreted in what I was saying was being taken and rewritten. And so my time at this church ended really hard and really sad without much clarity. And I think as I sit, I remember the day we had the meeting where they released me, and I was sitting with God, and God spoke so clearly to me in that moment. And I heard beyond a shadow of a doubt, God say to me, "Okay, now, Carmen, this is where the rubber meets the road. Do you believe what you so often have preached about, what you so often tell others to do, to find your identity in me and only in me? That I have called you to ministry? Anything that you have gained in ministry is because of the work of me, not because of titles or roles given by man." And as we talk about how to find the voice of God, when these might be my very messy handwriting, these might be words that define and describe your experience in your life, God still has something very clear to say to each of us. And it was one of the most significant moments for me to hear from God after feeling like there had been many months of hearing from others and listening to the climate of what was happening around me instead of hearing clearly from God. And so for God to say, this is where the rubber meets the road. Am I who I say I am to you? And now a lot of people had said after that, like, wow, Carmen, like, we would get it if you didn't want to return to church ministry after that. Or they would even say, like, we get if you just need a break from church. And I actually think as I talk to people in your demographic, that's a conversation that I have a lot, where because of stuff that is real and true and valid, like harm and abuse and misuse of power or brokenness, that they want to step away from church. And it's actually like, that's fair. That's very fair. But for me, at the end of the day, God reminded me that people can suck and the church of God can still prevail. Two things can be true at the same time. And it was God's grace that helped me to see. And when I say people suck, I'm not actually speaking ill over anyone. Sometimes I suck. I do. Actually, we all do. We are broken people and God uses us. And the brokenness that we see and experience sometimes in the church world, we need to figure out how to separate that from the goodness of God and the movement of his kingdom that he still wants to go forward. And if you're in a season where it's hard to separate those two, please don't be discouraged. Don't be hard on yourself. But I'm inviting us into a space to say, what is the future of the church aside from maybe the brokenness of people? Okay, I want to jump to another chapter, an earlier one. This happened before any of this happened, but they do converge, and hopefully you can stay with me. I was in another season of life being hard in different ways, for sure. And I can't say much because it's not entirely my story. It involves people that I love. But I can just say this. It was another time in my life of feeling like I was being hit by wave after wave of crisis. Have you ever had that where you just like you finally pick yourself up and another wave knocks you down and you're like, can I catch a break? And it was a season of still needing to lead through it, both at, in the church ministry world I was in and at home, finding safety for my family, finding health and well-being. And it was to this day, even apart from this story, the most disorienting season of my life and the scariest season of my life. And it was in that space, and this is where I get really vulnerable, that I made a poor choice. I made a poor choice on the internet. And as you know, the internet lives forever. And it was an online flirtatious interaction. Very anonymous, very harmless, felt that way for a bit. And it was very short-lived, only days. But here's the thing. None of it justifies what I did. But at the time, I felt like I could manage it and justify it. Because we all do this. We find ways to have mental gymnastics to find space in our life, corners in our life, pockets in our life, to hold things that we know shouldn't live and shouldn't be there. After all, it wasn't that big of a deal. And I remember days when I was living in that headspace. I knew it wasn't okay, but having walked the road I had, I was tired and I was lonely. I was still working as a pastor at the time, and God was actually doing some really cool things. And I remember thinking, God is still showing up in my life, even though I maybe don't deserve it. And I finally got to the point of thinking this. This sentence, like, I remember saying it over and over, and I want to share it with you because you might have a season in your life where you say it too. I think my soul is slowly dying. So I did what I had to do, which was the hardest thing to do, and that was to confess. To confess what I knew I needed to do to my husband, to my bosses at the time, because I worked in a church. And, you know, life as a Christian would probably be so much easier if we only ever had to confess our sin to Jesus. Because Jesus is so sweet and comfortable and lovely and just wants to snuggle us, right? But there is this pesky little verse in James chapter 5 that says this: confess your sin to one another so that you can be healed. And so that's what I did. It was hard and it was heavy, but it was the right thing to do. And I am actually really a firm believer. In the space that the sooner we bring things to the light, the quicker we take away Satan's power to keep us in the dark, to lie to us, to speak shame or inadequacy over us. And I actually think we'd have a lot less church scandals if we made more space for conversations like that to happen. And so even as I was preparing, I was praying for you, even though I didn't know who you would be, to say, if you find yourself in a space like that, we have to start normalizing. We're all broken. We all have pieces of ourselves that we kind of do these statements with. And the enemy wants us to keep them in that corner and keep them in the dark, but we have to turn them into the light, because in the light there is freedom, in the light there's no shame, there's no more bondage, and we can have these conversations. And it was a season of healing and processing and growing, and so it was beautiful, but it was a necessary season, and God's goodness and faithfulness never left me. But in some ways, I had to learn that lesson the hard way. And I want to share this with you today because I think that when we are in a hard season of life, we can maybe start to feel like seeking after the righteousness of God isn't worth it. Like sometimes it feels easier to stay on the hard road. An analogy someone told me once, like just envision like if you had two rooms in your house and you just always like tossed your, like, you know, when you're cleaning up and you're picking things up the stairs and you're bringing them where they need to go, if you tossed all the laundry that needed to happen, all the like clutter from your house, if you kept tossing it in the same room and one room stayed impeccably beautiful, what room is easier to keep putting junk into? Like the one that already has a bunch. It's easier. Yeah. Or like, it's like this, you know what? This room already has a bunch of junk. What's two more things? What's one more piece of laundry? I'll get to it later. I'll figure that out later. And I think sometimes when we're in a season of like on a road where we stepped outside of the direction God has for us, it can be almost easier to stay there because it's like, you know what? What's one more step down this road? What's one more step that takes us away? And God's constantly inviting us back into a season of righteousness with him. So how do these two stories converge? Well, they converge because years later it reemerged in my life, this through harassment and exposure in a season where I was a pastor leading a church through a sexual scandal. And I had to have some really long, hard conversations with God about why. Why, when I did what I was supposed to do and turned and repented and confessed, would this relive in my life? And I had to sit with the truth of a few things. That one, I had already done the work of repentance and confession, and I did not need to be brought back into shame. And that God's leading on my life in this church did not change because of it. He is still in control. And so that's an important point too, because every time there's failure in your own life, in the life of the church you're in, whatever circumstance you find yourself in, God is still in control. Every time we step outside of God's plan for us, he's just waiting for us to return. And his plan for you is not derailed. Every time that we think my story holds waves of loss and grief and failure and doubt, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we do not need to think somehow God has left me. He's no longer worth pursuing. So wherever your stories are, whatever your hardships are, whatever your chart paper words are, maybe you found yourself saying these at times, like, I can't do this. This is too big. Maybe someone has taken your voice away from you. Maybe you've experienced hardship. Maybe you've stepped out and done sin you know you shouldn't. Maybe you're currently living in a space where you're like, I'm holding on to something I know I shouldn't. Whatever that is, God is still holding you and wants to invite you into a space. And I want to talk about some of the things I have learned through seasons of hardship, through seasons of failure. And they're this. I'm going to walk over here. Oh, I'm sorry. Just demolishing your personal items. Well, the first, and this is what I invite you into, is to know yourself. So what I mean by that is when I was in the season of leading through crisis, and like I said, I was really scared to make any movement, right? I'm like, if I do this, people are going to be mad. If I do this, people are going to be mad. And I had this realization that, oh, wait, I'm an Enneagram 9. And that may or may not mean anything to you guys, if that's something your thing. And I started to think about the things that made up who I was. As an Enneagram 9, as someone who is a peacemaker, as someone who sits really neutrally in any argument at any point, I realized that the reason I was afraid to make a step, the reason why things were starting to feel hard for me, was because of how I was wired, and I didn't need to apologize for how I was wired. And actually, perhaps because of how God had created me, I was in a perfect position to be the one to lead our church in that season. And when we find ourselves in spaces that maybe feel disorienting or have deep grief, we can lose parts of who we are. We forget parts of how God has created us. And we start to get caught in cycles of feeling the failure, like, I'm not good enough to do this, or I can't make my way through this, or whatever the circumstance is. So pause and sit and say, who am I? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? What's my personality? What's going to give me life? What's going to exhaust me? In that season, I reminded myself, I might be the perfect person to lead here, but I also probably can't keep listening to every podcast about this whole scandal. Because every time I listened to the newest podcast, I would be like, oh yeah, they're totally right. Oh my gosh, I can't believe we wouldn't do that. And then I'd listen to another one and end up over here, or I'd read a newspaper article. And I was like getting torn, realizing because of me, my personality, and I can always see all the sides, it was actually like wearing me out. So that was a really good piece for me to know. The second thing I would invite you to do is to orient yourself. Just like in your conference booklets, you have a map of this building. You've got to figure out where you are so you can figure out how you're going to get to where you're going. The you are here. Where are you starting from? When there's resistance or doubt or weariness or discouragement in your life, ask yourself, what's going on around me that makes me feel this way? Is it true? Does it sound like the voice of God? Because when we experience times of resistance or hardship, remember that the pace of Jesus is never hurried. Jesus' voice often isn't like, hurry up, can you get better already? Can you figure that out? Like, come on, let's go. Jesus is unhurried. And when we truly submit to the way of Jesus, the call of Christ on our lives, the measurement of what we see as success, what we see as healing, what we see as forgiveness, all of that can change if we sort of orient ourselves to sit in that space. So ask yourself, like, what expectations have you put on yourself? In a season of hardship or loss or disorientation or sin, what expectations have you put on yourself? Are you feeling like failure because you think you should be over it? You should be further along than you are. What does that look like? When you think of the map of your life, think about where you might want to be, how involved you should be in things, and what sort of person you should have others, like, what do people expect of you? When I had kids, I have three kids. When I remember our third son, Silas, he was born 5 weeks before we had to move up to camp for the summer. Is anyone here a camp person? You even work at a camp, so you know the pace of life at camp. It's chaotic, it's crazy. And we moved up there, and I was just recovering, I was nursing, I had two other little kids. My husband was the camp director, so he was never around. And I remember feeling so mad at myself that I wasn't spending time with Jesus. And like, I was like, I suck. I'm supposed to be here teaching. We were doing LIT with all these teenagers, and I was supposed to be leading them. And I couldn't like find time to read the Bible. And I had to have my mentor be like, Carmen, like, you've got three kids, four and under, and you're up every hour of the night feeding a baby. Like, give yourself a break. And then this is just a free little nugget that he told me. When you find yourself in the desert, take lots of little sips. And I think sometimes for me, I was like, I need like a whole hour, and I need candles, I need worship music, and I need no one to interrupt me. It's like, that's never gonna happen until my kids are out of the house. But I can read the Bible for 4 minutes and absorb something, take a little sip, and then go somewhere else and take a little sip. So I needed to orient myself in that season because it was a new season that looked very different than before I had kids at all. Often we can't flourish because we don't know what conditions we're working with. We've lost track of all of that. Okay, the third is this. We need to align ourselves. And here's what I mean about that. This one has everything to do with your character. Making sure that all the pieces of who you are in alignment with one another. This is the one you are responsible for the most. How you conduct yourself when you're in a hard season says more about you than any one person ever could. The years of hardship, particularly when I was leading through church crisis, it brought so much imbalance because the days were so intense and so long and so full. I would do one of two things every night. I would go back to work once I put the kids to bed. So I was working like 16 hours a day. And because, you want to know why? Not because the work couldn't wait, but because I felt comfortable. It was like, this is my safe spot. And my laptop would open and I would just work. And that wasn't a healthy balance in my life. Or I would just sit and doom scroll on my phone. I would disassociate with everything that was heavy and hard in my life. And I wasn't aligned in who I was. I was far more drawn to my phone as a measure of escape than connection. I wasn't using it to connect with people. I was using it to like absorb far too many TikToks than I should. And so my encouragement for you, if you find yourself in one of these seasons, is to do the work. I think sometimes when things are hard, we feel like, well, this is a hard day. I don't have to do anything. You have work to do to make sure that you're character and who you are is aligned with how you're acting in that time. People applaud your success and your leadership. No one applauds the hard work you do to be a person of character and integrity. So tend to your heart, even when you're discouraged, even when you've been oppressed or harmed, even when your life is so heavy with loss and grief, tend to your heart. And the fourth one is to open yourself. And this is where we go back to the story of the Israelites, and this is where we'll end. In Exodus 16, the Israelites are complaining and they're grumbling, and God hears their grumbles. And in Exodus 16 is when we first see the idea of manna. Do you guys know what manna is? Do you guys remember that part of the story? It's when God says, okay, I've heard you, and I'm going to provide for you. And so every day, manna would fall from the sky as their provision of food. And there was a special instruction that God gave them regarding manna. Do you guys remember what it was? Yeah, just only take as much as you need for one day. And what did the Israelites do? Not that. They tried to hoard it. And they took more than they needed. And what happened to it? It went rotten. And so I think the Israelites, and we can chuckle because we know the whole story, and we're like, you guys are idiots, but we're no different. We're no different. And I put open yourself because I needed a fourth word that went with yourself. But no, because often we live with our hands clenched because we want to hold on to what we already know is comfortable, what we already know is familiar, which is why the Israelites said, just put us back in Egypt, which is insane. But that was safer. And God asks us every day to open ourselves, because he has something for you every single day. And what he has for you today is different than what he has for you tomorrow and what he has for you the next day. And sometimes when we get God's provision, we're like, oh, he's so good. He's so faithful. We got it. And then what do we do again? We try to hang on to that. And God is saying, but I have something for you tomorrow too. Like, you have to open your hands. And it's easier to open your hands in a season when life's going really good. It just is. Sun is shining. The birds are chirping. I'm healthy. My friends love me. Life is good. I've got a job. It's so easy to do this. When people fail us and there's brokenness and we're sinning and we're walking in a direction we shouldn't, people have let us down or hurt us, we start to hold on to what we know is familiar. And God truly, truly has something for you every single day. The word manna is actually Hebrew for the sentence, what is it? Because as it fell from the sky, the Israelites were saying, what is it? What is this? Because you know why? They'd never seen it before in their entire life. It was a whole new product. It was a whole new thing that God gave them. And unless we're willing to open our hands, we can't even ask or imagine what it is that God has in store for us. And so as we close, and I'm happy for questions, I'm happy for dialogue, we have a few minutes. I just want to read for us one verse in Corinthians, 2 Corinthians chapter 4. It says this, and this is my encouragement for you guys, wherever you find yourself, whatever season you're in. Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs it all. So whatever hardship your day holds today, whatever circumstance today holds, the eternal far outweighs it all. So fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary and what is unseen is eternal. We have some time that I'd love to just open it up for questions, conversation, and see if there's anything you guys want to process more. Yeah.
When you were talking about like escape, and then when my grandma from White died, and then like on Christmas Day, like without her, I went to my other grandparents, I went to both grandparents like when they were both alive, and this year, I went to my other grandparents, kind of thing. I've enjoyed spending time with my grandma Belle, but I was also escaping in the other house. I was like, I can't be here. I can't be here because there's no one here like this. Same with thing. And both my grandmas were also a mother figure to me. So when I lose my grandma, I lost the mother as well. That's the only mother I knew because I had lost my mother when I was a baby. So I didn't know my mother. She was the only mother I knew.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That's a lot of hardship and loss in one season, isn't it? Yeah, before we go, we'll spend some time praying for you and just that God will hold you in a season that has been really tough for you.
Yeah, I know I've been 2014 when my Bella died. Like at first, I was just like so full of anger. I took it out on God, even though. And then I thought, I went to the church, at my church, and I got to the anger part. I knew I wasn't just angry at God, at myself, and I was also upset with and guilty. I didn't visit more in the hospital. If I knew she was gonna die a week in the hospital, I would have visited more.
For sure.
Regret and everything came out all. Thing, but at first it was all a big snowball that just came out as anger.
Yeah, absolutely. That can be a response sometimes, can't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
So, I guess my question would be, How is the best way to handle a situation when, and I don't want to share too much of my story, but I grew up in an abusive situation, left home when I turned 18 because of it. God brought people in my life shortly after who, because of them, is really the only reason I'm alive today. And I was able to get the help that I needed, I was able to get through that, and I was able to really live, and for the first time in my life at 18 years old, actually know what it meant to love life. And I felt like I was finally, I felt like I had just started with it at 18 years old. And then, initially when I left, I ended up in another situation, which I was like, I want to be scared of that. And then, I really felt like life was really good for a period of time, and then last year I ended up with some health issues, which ultimately became a really bad mental state, to the point where I took my own life yet again. And it took time to kind of work through that again and get through that, and then I felt okay, now we're good again. Going, and then I ended up in yet another situation where I was like, I don't know how to keep going. I'm like, how do you break that
situation? Of it's like that wave after wave after wave. Yeah, I have thoughts, but I'd love to have this be collective. Does anyone have experience or anything they want to share? Yeah, go for it.
People talk about Christianity and Jesus on the way, that's how it's supposed to be. But a lot of people I read my Bible, I went to church, now I don't have any problems.
Right.
I don't think that's I don't think that's realistic. An everyday battle. I'm looking at this sheet figuring out how can I win my battle better? But I don't think it ever stops.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for that perspective. Yes, and then there. Yeah. Yeah, you. Yeah.
One thing I found in life that just after I've gone through a period of time over the last 6 years, that is my school was played even process something that happened in year one.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I can kind of semi comprehend is just because you're being a good Christian. Might have a degree in check marks, but that doesn't mean much. And I think a lot of people, including myself, forget the fact that even some of God's most faithful servants, Job, for example, are allowed to be tested for whatever reason, what that reason is, figure out. That happens.
Yeah, for sure. Did you still have somebody say,
Can't be able to big thing for me is kind of perspective. What I was talking about this morning is that we cannot comprehend the magnitude of trust.
Mm-hmm.
And we can always keep trying to do that, but that means that there is always more for us to know. And so for me, and especially like words on the first page, all these words, these thin words that are reflective of the state that we're living in the world, be reminded, one, God says, and two, what God says about you. There's a lot of Psalms that talk about this. Just constantly be reminded to reshape your perspective. Like, who am I? Mm-hmm. Who does God say? The God of the universe knows me better than that. And then who is God as well? And what is God?
Yeah, that's really beautiful. To constantly be reminded. I have thoughts, but this is good too. Yeah.
I think the one thing that I noticed with myself, because I really do like emphasize what you're saying, and about the feeling of like there's always the cycle of, and how do you get out of it? I think one thing that I really love though is this idea that feeling, quote unquote, I always start with that, feeling doesn't mean that you will go through those same experiences again. But in a sense, it won't necessarily hold the same grip on you whenever you
do.
Maybe it's been.
Yeah.
Not like it might be a bad Christian, but if I were to like read God, I'd say, why do you make it so hard?
Yeah.
I mean, like God,
yeah.
Not just you, like
For sure.
Like, in times, talk about where you didn't necessarily see a way. Way out of the situation,
mm-hmm.
and then found a way through it. Like, how do you find yourself saying, like, well, I'd really like to ask God why?
100%. So I don't think it makes you a bad Christian. I think you're just voicing what we all have on some level inside. Like, what the heck, Jesus? Why did it have to be this way?
What's your perspective on, like, mm-hmm. but, like, what's your perspective on why God would that there's no good without a bad? Like, that's as simple as that, because I've heard that and it makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, I will answer, and I don't want to forget your question. So maybe I'll do that and then we'll put a pin and come back to that. I think just before we switch topics, I think what you're saying is really good. Like, how do you get out of a cycle when things like feel really hard and there's hard season? So thank you for sharing even what you did. I think there's a few things. Probably good to make a disclaimer in this room. Like, in no way am I a paid professional, like professional in the realm of counseling or therapy. And I just want to name that too, is we hold space for hard things. That absolutely is one of those routes that is really significant. And is really meaningful in so much of what we hold. Whatever, you might be like, I don't know if I need it. I think therapy is the best thing anyone can do at any point. So getting the support you need that way is really significant. Also, I think then there's this category. There's no magical, like, poof, now my life is going to take a different path. The second thing, though, that I think is really helpful is to just make sure you're surrounding yourself with people who are for you and who know you. And who are going to do two things to you: ruthlessly encourage you and like ruthlessly hold you accountable to moving towards being the person that you're supposed to be. And in these seasons of my life, I had that. And it was so significant and so meaningful. And so I think that's another thing to do. I don't know if that door works. Oh, it does. Great. You're good. And then finally, I would say, like, don't underestimate the power of slow and steady. We live in a world of instant gratification and instant, like, results. But trust a few things. Trust that God is working in you and forming in you. And trust that if you do put in the work, it will start to make a change. So you might be here and you might be thinking, like, I'm just going to use, like, a really generic example. So not related to your situation, but be like, I wanna be able to run 10K. And so you start on day one, like, running 500 meters because that's all you can do. And you might be like, that's hardly anything. Like, how the heck am I supposed to get there? But look what happened. We do that, and the trajectory has already changed. And then day two looks like this, and day three looks like this, and day four looks like this. And before you know it, you've made a big difference even though on day one it didn't feel like a lot, and day two didn't feel a lot, day three didn't either, because slowly it only ever looks incremental. But over time, and that's true of how we heal, it's true of how we engage with Jesus. We might be like, what's the point of reading my Bible? Nothing ever changes. Nothing ever changes. Things are changing within you. It's a slow, steady formation that God has for us. And so I think specifically with you, the stuff you're talking about is pretty significant, and there's probably other layers of what it means to get support and help and health, but be encouraged that the work is paying off, even if it doesn't feel like it on day one or day 21. Is that related to that? Kind of?
Somewhat.
Yeah, go for it. And then I haven't forgotten your question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where on earth did this go?
Mm-hmm.
And it was that moment where I just got down on my knees and like prayed. And God, I read a passage in Philippians talking about the peace of God that depends on it. And I was like, okay, God, can I ask on that, please?
Yeah, please. This would be great. Yeah.
And I think it was like the next week or the next day, I woke up feeling so such surreal. Like I felt like the eye of the hurricane. And that day, I rededicated my life to the Lord. And I was like, you're there. You care about me.
Yeah.
You're there. And looking back at that moment and past that, for the next few months, God did so much work in my life. I didn't even notice. Again, like it was 3 months.
It's just little. Yeah.
And then when I looked back, I was like, oh man, like if I took athlete from 8 years ago, who had so much social anxiety and depression, and got him to see the present me, mine would be blown. And like part of that, the purpose in that, where I realized, was that sometimes you go through battles, but through those battles, God is trying to help you grow in something. He has the prune shears, and he's cutting off branches that produce no fruit, but you still cling on to them. And it was in that season where I was still, my eyes were covered still.
Yeah.
Oblivious to this this dysfunctional family of it. And through that experience, it felt like I was being torn apart. But God was actually pruning things off, pruning attachments that were truly unhealthy. And over that time I grew a new sense of self and confidence through that.
Beautiful.
And so now looking forward, I'm like I'm actually somewhat have a hope and not somewhat have hope. Somehow have a joy when bad things come, hardships come. I'm like, there's going to be something I get to learn from this. I get to grow. And I get to grow so much that then I can look back again and be like, I grew so much from this. Like, this is so like encouraging. And I get to be a better version of myself, my future family, my future kids, for the next generation on. I can be a change.
Beautiful.
And I can totally change the trajectory of how.
Thank you for sharing. It's a beautiful story of the work of God in our lives. Yes, and then yes.
Yeah, I just want to make a statement on that, like, quotes I want to share. That, like, I recently heard that, like, worshiping God in pain is a privilege that we can only give on this side of eternity. It's
good.
When you go out of this eternity, like, it's like, you know, like, you're no longer, like, inside, like, the broken world where, like, you can feel all the pain inside us, right? So, like, it's only available on this side. The other line is like a line from the song Another in the Fire. The last line of the song is so powerful. I'll count the joy come every battle because I know that's where you'll be. That's how I always see it. It's like during the moments where like your character development, like the character development, that's when I feel the most. Right?
Yeah, so, there's a formation that's happening. Did you had your hand up or no? Yeah. Okay.
Doing those desert seasons.
yeah.
as well. When you mentioned that the soul is actually like slowly dying and all yeah. that, how do you distinguish when it's, the soul is actually dying
mm-hmm.
or how much you're losing your weight or when you're like being stripped
mm-hmm.
like something essential?
Yeah. That's a really good question. I definitely haven't forgotten about yours either. Although if we use up all the time, I don't have to answer the hard questions. So keep me. I'm just joking. The difference for me, this is not this answer. We could talk for hours about it. But in the, for me, I knew this was true because I was stuck in a pattern of sin. And so the difference between being in a season where God was is stretching you is I was actively choosing to kind of step outside of what God was wanting for me. And so I wasn't letting him water me, nourish me. What's it called when the seed is still underground? Like, that's a season. In the desert season, there's something still happening under the ground. And I could more easily remember the truths of who God was, even if I couldn't feel them. And I more easily could remind myself that he was calling me to something, even if it felt scary. But in a season like this, I knew my soul was withering because I was preventing God's hand from being at work in my life. And I was doing that mental gymnastics of like, I can fit this in, can't I? God's still working. Look at the ministry I still have. And that's where I knew there was a disalignment and my soul was like cut off from experiencing the nourishment. So I know our time is up. I want to get to your question. This is not a great answer because like I think people still wrestle with this for years and years, and it's like the age-old question, why does God let bad things happen? So here's what I'll say. I'll say a few things. I do think that God created humans to be in partnership with, and so we have free will and we have free agency. And there's examples of this all through scripture where like, we want a king, and God's like, okay, I'll give you a king. We have stepped away from like his original plan because we have used our own free agency, and that I think is what has caused the brokenness in our world. And I think it grieves God's heart more than we know that, like we all graded the world at a big fat F. It grieves his heart. And I think we can sit here and we can pray, God, why won't you fix something? And he's saying, I would love for you to. And he's called us to be people of compassion and people of justice and people of mercy and people of advocacy. And if we did half of what Jesus' words invite us to do, our world would flourish. And the other thing I'll say, John 16:33 says this, and this is Jesus' words, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, because I have overcome the world. So I know that doesn't actually answer your deep theological question, because I don't know. I don't know why this is the way that God has called it to be, but what I do know is we have this agency that he gave us out of love for us to partner with him in his kingdom work, or to not. And I'm going to pray for us. And then I know it's break time. So let me pray. Thank you guys for sharing. Thank you for holding space for my stories. And thanks for sitting in a room that's a bazillion degrees. Let's pray. God, thank you that you are here. You are working. You are in our midst. And God, there's no way in an hour that we can begin to talk about the hardships, the places that feel heavy, the seasons of our life that hold loss and grief and disorientation and all of the rest. So my prayer as we walk out of here is that by your Spirit, you would capture in our hearts the truth of who you are, the truth of who we are in you. And God, if we're in a season where it's really hard to hear your voice, or we have hurt or harm or confusion or doubt, that you again, by your Spirit, would walk alongside us and say, let me speak clearly to you now. You are a God of love. You are a God that works with us. You are a God that sits with us. And you're a God who heals us. May all of that be true for us as we leave today. We pray in your name. Amen. Thank you, guys.